Broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, a fresh edition of Czech books with David Vaughan introducing a new Czech literature guide. After that, we'll be going places in spotlight, and today's destination is the picturesque town of Pardubice, east of Prague. And traditionally, we'll wind up the show with another edition of David Vaughan's popular history series from the archives, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning. Stay with us for all that as we get the show rolling with Czech books. If you're looking for an overview of the current Czech literary scene in English, everything from surrealist poets to second-hand bookshops, the new Czech Literature Guide should be just the book for you. As it states in its introduction, the book's aim is to present a panorama of the contemporary life of Czech literature. David Vaughan reports.
The guide has been compiled by the editors of the Czech Literature Portal. As we discussed in past editions of this programme, the portal, which is funded mainly by the Ministry of Culture, aims to provide a broad and up-to-date online information service about Czech writing today. And the new book is very much part of that service. Its editors are Viktor Debnar and Jaroslav Balvin. I asked them both to tell me more about the guide, starting with Jaroslav.
Czech Literature Guide shall mediate to foreigners who are interested in Czech literature the contemporary situation in Czech literature.
So the idea is to give a general overview on what's going on in the world of Czech literature and publishing as well, in fact.
Yeah, Czech prose, Czech poetry, and also the situation in Czech publishing, including the problem of VAT.
That's a particularly current debate, because up until recently VAT on books was very low. It was 5%, and it's crept up, and currently the government has plans to raise it eventually, I believe, as much as 19%.
It's because our Prime Minister is chemist, and the reforms are his chemist focus.
Experiment. So it's a chemical experiment. I thought you were going to say it's because he doesn't have such a close relationship to literature, but it may be also that. Who is the publication intended for? Obviously it's in English, so it's for anybody who can read English and is interested in Czech literature, but who's it intended for, and how are you going to distribute the book?
It's intended to get to both academic people, scholars, people dealing with Czech language, Czech literature at the universities abroad, as well as for, I would say, regular readers worldwide, or even people not speaking Czech and living in the Czech Republic, because they can find there interesting information about all parts of the literary life. For example, a list of interesting second-hand bookshops or literary cafes, or, for example, different institutions and foundations that give some grants or scholarships and so on.
And it really is pretty thoroughly researched. I was looking through, about two-thirds of the book is made up of lists of all kinds of things, institutions, as you say, from magazines to bookshops to publishers to literary agencies, with contact details and summaries of what they do. It's certainly a very useful book to have at hand. Is it on sale in bookshops, or are you going to distribute it primarily through book fairs? Or, for example, can Radio Prague's listeners who are interested, can they order the book in some way?
Well, we intend to distribute the book, as you mentioned, through different book fairs in Germany or England and other countries, and different universities and libraries. Mm-hmm. And we want to reach foreign publishing houses that might be, or we think they might be, interested in publishing Czech authors. We also sell the book but we think for a very reasonable price of 100 crowns or 4 euros.
At the beginning of the book, there's quite a long overview of the history of Czech literature, which in the 20th century, which readers might also find useful and interesting in terms of giving some background. Viktor.
This text you are speaking about is an introductory text to the book. It's the more theoretical part of the book. We think that it's an important text for foreigners to get to know Czech literature, because in the past century or in the past 50 years there were many really good authors which should be remembered, or which people abroad might found interesting.
I found it also very interesting, the part of the book which is about translations and about the different translations into different languages, not only from Czech into foreign languages, but also from foreign languages into Czech. And it's very interesting some of the specifics of that. For example, that some writers seem to be very popular in certain countries. A particular example that is mentioned in the book is the novelist Miloš Urban, whose kind of gothic detective stories have found quite a sizable readership in the Spanish-speaking world.
The situation is quite bizarre, because some authors who are famous in Czech Republic as some kind of high, you know, high literature, are maybe in USA or in England taken as sci-fi, lower literature. It's a case of Michal Ajvas. His two last novels in English, they won some prizes for sci-fi and fantasy.
That's interesting, because here in the Czech Republic, probably most people would think of Michal Ajvas as a slightly difficult author, as a postmodern author, sort of dealing with all sorts of ideas, I suppose, of deconstruction and that kind of thing. And so in the English-speaking world, through translation, he's more accessible, is he?
Yes, it's a detail.
Another example is writer Iva Procházková, who is very popular in Germany.
Iva Procházková's novel Nazi, or Naked, or Die Nackte, it was published at first in Germany, and there it won some kind of highest prize, and then the novel was published in Czech Republic. But it's because Iva Procházková, she's author who lives quite long in Germany.
And also translating into Czech, I notice there's a very interesting statistic that you give in the book, that over a third of books published in the last couple of years in the Czech Republic are translations from other languages. That means that there must be a huge translation industry, let's say, a lot of translations coming out. Also, it must make it very hard to oversee the quality of translations. Is this a major problem in the Czech Republic?
Well, maybe the Czech Republic has quite a huge translator industry, but I don't know if we can say that it is real industry, because the Czech translators, as well as translators in other Eastern European states, are not very good paid. So this is a big problem, and the translator have to translate very much, so maybe the translations are sometimes not good.
And a part of what the book does as well is you're trying to map the trends both in writing and also in the publishing business. And there's an interesting little chapter, for example, about the spread of e-books in the Czech Republic. A couple of years ago, I did an interview with a Czech publisher who was just beginning to produce e-books, and the business hadn't really started yet, or hadn't really caught on. Has that changed since then? Jaroslav.
Yes, it has changed, because there are new established companies who distribute the books digitally, but also the, I suppose, biggest player in the Czech distributing industry, Cosmas, made a section in his bookstore as e-bookstore, so this is the big change, and I think that the e-book industry will progress more and more.
And this publication, the Czech Literature Guide, it's in book form. You, as our listeners will, well, many of our listeners will know, because we've interviewed you in the past about this, you also have a Czech literature portal at www.czechlit.cz, which offers an excellent sort of overview in Czech and also in English of Czech contemporary writing and with extracts from works by Czech writers. Is the information in this book also available through your website?
Well, yes, because similar texts or similar topics which are covered in the book are, of course, available on the website. And at the end of this year, we would like to post the book in a PDF format on the portal also. And we would like to have the guides also as an e-book.
So you're actually moving with the trends that we've just been talking about. And not just to stick to this particular publication, but also to talk about your portal a little bit. I understand that you have plans at the moment to expand the portal in English and German.
Now we search for editors, so we hope that we find some good editors who will help us to make it better.
So if anybody who happens to hear this on Radio Prague or read it on the Radio Prague website, who should they contact if they're interested in helping you out with this?
They can find the Czech Literature Portal, and there is contact on editor and also contact on my colleague Viktor Demnar.
So once again, that's www.czechlit.cz.
Well, anyone who is interested can find the contacts or the text of the announcements on the portal, and the deadline for applications is the end of March.
Viktor Debnar and Jaroslav Balvin from the Czech Literature Portal, thank you very much indeed for talking about this new publication, the Czech Literature Guide, and I hope that it'll capture the imagination of some of our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting us.
David Vaughan with that edition of Czech Books. And now on Radio Prague, we're inviting you to take a trip outside the Czech capital with Colleen O'Connor, who will show you around the town of Pardubice, east of Prague.
I'm standing on the picturesque square of Pernštinovo náměstí, in the centre of Pardubice, about an hour away from Prague in East Bohemia, which is where this edition of Spotlight comes from. The pretty Renaissance buildings on Pernštinovo náměstí and the impressive chateau nearby give an indication of this town's long and rich history, which saw it evolve from a prosperous hamlet in the Middle Ages to an industrial powerhouse by the start of the 20th century. The first historical reference to Pardubice dates back to 1295, and the original settlement was officially declared a town in 1340. Pardubice began to flourish as an urban centre in the region when it was taken over by the Pernštín noble family at the end of the 15th century. They turned the town's original castle into the opulent chateau that still stands to this day. They also rebuilt the town on a large scale, first in a late Gothic and then in an early Renaissance style. Many of the buildings erected at the time are still in existence, and it's easy to see why "to sparkle like Pardubice" was a popular saying at the time, when you see the imposing grandeur of these old municipal houses. The town suffered a lot during the 30 Years' War and was nearly razed to the ground during an attack by Swedish troops in 1645. It took a long time for Pardubice to get over this setback, and it only really began to come into its own again with the advent of the railway in the late 19th century. David Kopitz is head of external relations for Pardubice City Hall.
The railway has been and still is important, as it connects the capital of Prague with the south, with Moravia. And since Pardubice has been one of the key routes or key transport knots, this could be a reason for many investors to come here and for the industry to keep developing. It also allowed a greater involvement of the population. So with higher population, you have more workers and more speedy economic development.
After the arrival of the railroad, Pardubice quickly became known as something of a manufacturing powerhouse by the early 20th century. It was to remain a centre of industry right throughout the socialist era, particularly as a centre of chemical and engineering production. Unlike many other places that were hubs of state enterprise under socialism, the technical nature of Pardubice's staple industries meant that its highly skilled workforce were able to successfully adjust to the economic transformation that occurred after 1989. David Kopitz again.
Pardubice is still today an industrial city, even though the industries have been restructured in the 90s. Initially, it was particularly chemical industry, and later on, it was also heavy engineering, as a very common industry in the socialist times. And now, in the 90s, we have been focusing on electronics through a Taiwanese company, Foxconn, one of the largest manufacturers of computer components in the world. And the second industry that begins to dominate in Pardubice is subcontracting for the automobile area, automobile manufacturers. Those are the new modern industries. Nonetheless, the chemical and partially engineering still persists.
One of the most famous, or rather notorious, products manufactured in Pardubice is the plastic explosive Semtex, which was the weapon of choice for many terrorist organizations in the 1970s and 80s, because of the fact that it was so hard for security screening equipment to detect it. Semtex is still produced here, but thankfully its manufacturers now make sure to tag all exports so they can be picked up by X-ray machines. It's safe to assume, however, that most natives of Pardubice are more proud of their town's other extremely famous export. The tradition of making gingerbread in Pardubice dates back to the 16th century, when a special guild of gingerbread bakers was established in the town. Over the years, they refined and improved recipes to such an extent that the town became synonymous with this confection. Pardubice gingerbread is now even in the process of being granted a special geographical trademark by the European Union. According to David Kopitz, there are still a number of gingerbread companies in Pardubice to this day, and the consumption of gingerbread is very much part of life in the town.
There are generally two kinds of gingerbread. One would be decorated gingerbread that can be eaten, but mostly it's kept on the shelf as a souvenir, because those are quite art pieces, I would say. And the second kind would be gingerbread for eating, that's just nicely wrapped. And with this kind, we also have a tradition that after ice hockey game, if the team wins, spectators throw this kind of gingerbread on the ice. The gingerbread is collected and taken to a local school for handicapped. So this would be another tradition linked to gingerbread.
Ice hockey is actually very much part of the fabric of Pardubice, and the town boasts a very proud hockey tradition. The local team is one of the top outfits in the Czech National League and has produced many excellent players, including NHL stars Michal Sikora and legendary goaltender Dominik Hasek. Nevertheless, ice hockey is far from the only sport associated with Pardubice. Velká Pardubická steeplechase, which is sometimes known as the Czech Grand National. This event has been held in Pardubice since as far back as 1874, and it has developed a reputation as one of the most grueling and challenging steeplechases in the world. It has long occupied an important place on the continental racing calendar, and as many as 30,000 people from all over Europe descend on the town for the annual Velká Pardubická race meeting. According to David Kopitz, this race meeting is just one of the many delights Pardubice has to offer visitors.
All the visitors should not come just to see the city itself, but rather the happening inside the city. Sports is definitely something to see. If not Velká Pardubická, then possibly the Golden Helmet, famous speedway racing, or one of the hockey games or basketball games. Everything is on a very top of the national leagues. From the historical monuments, we like to present the castle as a pride of the city. And as you also have seen, the historic Penštinské square is worth mentioning. Now it's been almost fully reconstructed, renovated, and I believe it is admired by most of the tourists.
The quality of the amenities in and around Pardubice is one of the reasons why the town is considered by many to be one of the most attractive places to live in the Czech Republic. In fact, earlier this year, a Czech daily newspaper conducted an exhaustive survey of locations in the Czech Republic and declared Pardubice to be the best place to reside in this country. It's a conclusion that does not surprise David Kopitz.
Pardubice is becoming also a very modern city with new developments, new housing. There is a very low unemployment rate. It's now below 5% in the region and below 4% in Pardubice itself. There is a good access to jobs. There is fairly good access to this cultural and sporting life. There is also some nature sites around Pardubice. We can go biking, skating, lots of possibilities for free time adventures. There is also the university that offers very decent education, belongs to top 10 in Czech. So plenty of attractions, and I could understand that Pardubice, with the size of about 90,000 inhabitants, would become one of the best places to live in the Czech Republic.
That edition of Spotlight was first aired in December of 2007, and you will find pictures of the town on Radio Prague's webpage at radio.cz, where you will find an extensive Spotlight archive of places to visit. And now for the history buffs among you, here is another part of David Vaughan's From the Archives, a popular history series which we are currently rerunning.
For the younger generation that had grown up since the end of World War II, the Soviet-led invasion of August 1968 was traumatic. The Prague Spring had brought an atmosphere of optimism and genuine enthusiasm for change, and all these hopes were crushed overnight. In this week's From the Archives, we'll hear what students had to say at the time, as recorded by Czechoslovak and foreign radio stations as the occupation unfolded. This anonymous young man sums up the sense of uncertainty that came with the invasion.
I am a Czech student, 22 years old. At the very moment I am recording this, the Russian tanks, prepared for any action, are standing in a big park just under my window. I don't know whether I ever finish my studies, meet my friends abroad again, and I could count and count, but at this moment, everything somehow loses its sense. At 3 a.m. 21st August 1968, I woke up to a completely different world from that one I went to sleep in.
During the days that followed, foreign correspondents were running around Prague, trying to make sense of what was going on. They recorded numerous interviews, especially with students who had gone out into the streets in huge numbers, trying to persuade the young Soviet soldiers that they were unwanted and uninvited. Here are two students talking to the BBC on the third day of the invasion, August the 24th.
I have been spoken with many Russian soldiers. You can't explain them anything. They are like the wall. You say them why you came. They said, we are your brothers, we are liberators. I say, no, it isn't true. You must see that there is no contrarevolution, that nobody wants you, that nobody needs your help. No, I'm your friend, I'm the brother, and I came to make freedom, I came to make order in your country.
They are always saying, we want to fight against counter-revolution in Czechoslovakia, but I think they don't know what counter-revolution means. from January we had a new government which united the Czech nation. And now the Russians came to make another government. This is counter-revolution.
I think this occupation was very bad for young people, and because young people were very happy in our republic within the 6 months from January to August. There was so big enthusiasm that you can't believe.
Outside Czechoslovakia, students were every bit as shocked by the invasion, as we can hear in the following extract. This is part of a Deutsche Welle report from the then German capital, Bonn, on the day of the invasion, August the 21st.
In front of the Soviet embassy near Bonn, from early in the morning, groups of students and young people assembled to demonstrate against the invasion of Czechoslovakia.
Can you tell me who's demonstrating here?
Well, it's all sorts of people, young people, students, some journalists I see around here, people from all walks of life, I would say.
And why are they demonstrating?
Well, of course, they are all fed up with the Russian intervention in Czechoslovakia.
What's your personal reaction? What was your reaction when you heard about it this morning?
Well, I was gravely shocked when I was called at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I think this is really the worst thing that could have happened to East-West relation and to all of us who thought that there might be a way of getting closer to the East.
I was very, very sad because Czechoslovakia was the hope for young people in East and West, in the Eastern and the Western world, to show that democracy and socialism goes together, that there was one country trying to have a policy for people, not for some power interest, just for people. And it was very, very sad news this morning.
The sense of disillusion and bewilderment was shared by students on both sides of the Iron Curtain.
From the archives with David Vaughan, and I'm afraid that's all we have for you today from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Our programmes are there in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. And I'd also like to bring to your attention the fact that Radio Prague has just launched a brand new monthly quiz. You will find the details on our webpage. Again, the address is radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.